Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up, play-by-play guy, VSiN contributor Ben Wilson will join us. We will go over the four-division series, the Rams 49ers, which was a big upset, which we haven't had too many recently in the NFL this year, at the end of last year. We'll get into his picks for the NFL. So a lot of baseball, a lot of football, a great time of the year, and that was a great sports night on Thursday. And I'll start here with the Yankees and the Red Sox. As the Yankees advance, they will play Toronto Saturday afternoon. And what a performance from Cam Schlittler. Somebody who, and this is just crazy how sports works, how life works. Super 70 Sports tweeted this out. Cam Schlittler, who made his debut in the major leagues July 9th, on July 2nd gave up 7 runs in 2 1/3 inning to the Iron Pigs of Lehigh Valley in the minor leagues. And he looked like basically the best pitcher you've ever seen on Thursday night. 8 shutout innings, 12 Ks in an era where these guys get pulled after 2, 3 innings, 4 innings for the non-freed, crochet, scuba guys. It's not common that, all right, you gave us 4 good innings, we'll get on to the next guy. 8 shutout innings. I actually thought they might give him a shot to start the ninth. He was rolling that good. Just say, you know what, go batter by batter. Once Bednar walked the leadoff guy in the ninth, they said, oh my goodness, if Boone pulled this kid, and you couldn't kill him for pulling him, but if Boone pulls this kid and Bednar blows it, he'll never live this down. That might actually get him fired, even though we all know he has a lifetime contract. But the Yankees advance, and I think from a Red Sox standpoint, well, first off, I'll say this. The reason the Yankees are advancing, the reason the Red Sox are out, is a lot of the things that have hurt the Yankees all year, always kill the Yankees for their bad defense and their bad base running. As great as Schlittler was, early looked up to the task early on. No pun intended. He was really good. He threw the ball incredibly well, and it really unfolded for him in that fourth inning. Really, it was just the defense. It was, all right, Rosario hit a ball hard, but it was a little bleeder that should have been caught. Ends up being a double. The ground ball, the first low, could have easily had. Easily. That went, and they gave him a hit on that. I think they gave him an error on that. But that could have, look, tough play, but a play a big leader's got to make. I mean, it was all dinks and dunks and bad defense. And before you know it, it was 4-0. And from then on, pretty anticlimactic. Red Sox only got one runner to second base all night. And again, it was defense and base running that undid them, because the Yankees, and I was at the game two, the Yankees were very close. Now, they could have won game one, but the Yankees were very close to being eliminated in game two. Two on, nobody out in a tie game, top of the eighth inning. And two out, nobody on, and the bunt gets popped up. There's an overthrow eventually with two outs where the Red Sox don't score. Everything was there for Boston to win. It might have been the seventh inning, but it was the inning where it was two on, nobody out. And it was the seventh because Williams pitched the eighth. The seventh inning was right there where they should have scored on the overthrow. They didn't get the bunt down. Rodon, who I don't know why Boone left him in as long as he did. First, he leaves Fried in and pulls him too quick. Then he leaves Rodon in too long. But he gets away with it, and the Red Sox really had every opportunity to knock the Yankees out in Game 2 and not get to a Game 3. Kind of had a feeling with how good and competitive and intense Games 1 and 2 were, it was going to be hard for Game 3 to live up to the hype, and once the Yankees scored those 4 runs, that was it. Again, you can't say enough about how good Schlittler was, and the Red Sox are going to think about that 7th inning on Wednesday night all winter long, because they had every opportunity to be on their way right now to Toronto and knock the Yankees out. It would have been a devastating loss for the Yankees, who played really well down the stretch. Yankees have a better team than Boston. I mean, Yankees have a better team, but in a best of three scenario, better doesn't matter. And the Red Sox really, really could have, I don't want to say should have, but I guess you could say should have moved on. And not just that, the ball Judge hit, which speaking of scoring, there was no way that ball should have been a hit. On Wednesday night, Duran did not need to die for it. It hits him right in the glove. There's no way that's a base hit. That's a ball that's got to be caught. So talk all year, and to be fair about it, kill the Yankees for bad defense, bad fundamentals, bad base running. All of that stuff undid Boston, and that's why they are going home, and that's why the Yankees are going to Toronto. Yankees are a -152 favorite for the series. Don't have an announced star yet. I'd imagine it's either Heal or Warren. I mean, it has to be either Luis Heal or Will Warren. I would think it would be Heal. Never in a best of five do you call it a punt game, but with their pitching recovering, you can kind of mix and match. Heal, Warren, he actually saved a lot of the bullpen other than Bednar, who does get a day off here. You know, Williams is going to be pretty rested. He's going to have a couple days off. Cruz is going to have a couple days off. Tim Hill can be in the mix. Weaver if you want to see him. So the Yankees are actually going to have some options behind either Heel or Warren if you want to try to get a couple innings out of each of them and then go to the bullpen. That could be a route you go. But I think the Yankees are beating Toronto. Bottom line, I do think they're beating Toronto. I don't love the idea of laying $1.50 or so when you don't have home field. But I think with Fried going game two, I think they can get a split. And I know Toronto has played well against them all year. Toronto's really kind of dominated them. And they had that four-game sweep in Toronto around the 4th of July that week. I think the Yankees are winning the series. I think the Yankees are winning the series. And wouldn't it be fitting after this great debate of Judge or Cal Raleigh for MVP, wouldn't it be fitting if those two squared off in the ALCS and it's Yankees Mariners? I kind of think we're headed that way. I can't discount Detroit with Skubal. In a best of five, you're going to have him in games two and games five most likely. And if you can win those two, which you always feel good when he's on the mound, you just got to figure out a way to win one of the other three. But I still think Seattle's got enough pitching, enough offense. I think they get it done. Again, I don't really want to lay $1.72. But I do think it's going to be Yankees and Mariners. I think the Yankees are going to beat Toronto. Again, do you really want to lay $1.50? Do you want to take a shot that, you know, Yankees in four where you get a split and then you close it out games three and games four and go that route and take, you know, plus 360? You could do that. But these are great series. Can't wait for them. Dodgers and Phillies is going to be absolutely incredible. And that's the one of all of these from a betting standpoint. Dodgers minus 124 for the series. Cubs minus Brewers minus 116 for the series. All these from a betting standpoint. Ohtani game one plus money is the best bet. I just think with their lineup, they'll hit in Philly. That's a small ballpark. I know Sanchez has been good, but give me Ohtani, who's stretched out here at plus money to win game one. That's my favorite of all of these. Yankees are minus 101. Toronto slight minus 120 favorites in game one here, but again, no starters are listed. I would imagine it's Gausman going for Toronto, and then it's again probably Heel for the Yankees. But four awesome series, can't wait for it. Should be a lot of fun. You can make a case the winner of Dodgers Phillies is not only going to come out of the National League but win the whole thing. I don't think that's crazy at all. Not crazy to think we get a rematch after everything that happened last year. Not crazy to think we get Yankees Dodgers once again, which is a bad matchup for them. Dodgers just have more raw talent, although the Dodger bullpen is an absolute disaster. They've tried to let the Reds back in both of those games, in games one and two, even though you look at the scoreboard and they win both of them and win them comfortably. It's not a great Dodger team, but there is no great team this year in baseball. So divisional round starts this weekend. Friday, we get a day to catch our breath. It's going to be weird. After wall-to-wall baseball all day Tuesday, all day Wednesday, three games on Thursday, three game threes, and I had a feeling, should have bet accordingly, had a feeling we were due for some game threes. Not that they're correlated events, things that happened 2-3 years ago, but with all of the sweeps the first few years and these best-of-three series, at some point we're going to get some game threes, and we got them. It was just great to have baseball Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, all day, all night. It's going to be a little bit withdrawal. You can be sitting there Friday afternoon, Friday night, looking for a game, itching for a game, and there's not going to be anything on. So you do have some college football here on Friday, which is always good. Although the games are not great. What do we have? Charlotte, South Florida, Western Kentucky, Delaware, New Mexico, and San Jose State, and then West Virginia and BYU. So you're going to get a little itchy. If you're a big baseball fan, especially if you're a Yankee fan and you have that adrenaline of watching playoff baseball every night, there's going to be a little bit of a come down on Friday, but it will be back on Saturday and the Yankee season continues, and get just a bitter, bitter loss for the Red Sox. I know it was kind of house money and they're a young team and they traded Devers, but hey, expectations readjust themselves. And when you win game one and you have game two there for the taking and you don't get it home and then you're never really in the mix in game three, that's a tough pill to swallow for Boston. As far as the football, crazy game on Thursday night. I say this all the time when I talk about the NFL. It felt a million different times like San Francisco was going to win. A million different times it felt like the Rams were going to win. The Rams win. The 49ers win. Sorry, they pull off the upset. That line went from like 3.5 to 8.5, 9. Mac Jones was tremendous for the 49ers. He looked every bit as good as Purdy. So the people that say Purdy's a system quarterback, anyone could be good there. Well, Thursday night did not do a lot to disprove it because Purdy looked every bit as good as Mac Jones looked every bit as good as Purdy did. And that's the first big upset we've had this year. I guess Packers-Browns was a pretty big one, but this is the biggest upset, and we haven't had a lot of these teams that are favored by north of a touchdown you know, cough up the games, lose the games. Really, at the end of last year, it was all chalk. The beginning of this year, it's been mostly chalk. So this is one where if you got, and I always say got cute because, look, you're taking an 8.5, 9-point favorite in Survivor, so it's not even getting cute. But when the Survivor numbers are announced and who picked who and how many people picked the Rams, I'm sure there was a good chunk of the pool on the Rams Thursday that is now out, and the 49ers get it done. I had no problem with McVay going for it at the end. 4th and 1, you're down 3. If you kick, you're basically taking the win off the table. I mean, you could have run a more imaginative play than just bunch everybody up and try to run it a yard. And by the way, Kyren Williams fumbled near the end of regulation. He's got a fumbling problem because he killed him at the end of the Philly game. And you know, he's killed him with some big fumbles here in these recent games. But I had no problem with it. I just thought that the play could have been a little more imaginative. I know some people had an issue with Shanahan being a little conservative towards the end of regulation when they got the fumble, that you know maybe should have been a little more imaginative, a little more aggressive. It's hard when you're on your 1 yard line, inside your one, like the half yard line. It's hard to be too aggressive, too creative. I guess what are you going to do, run play action and try to throw it? You wanted to get the Rams, who had 3 timeouts, you wanted to take their timeouts off the table. So, again, those weren't 3 beautiful plays by any stretch, but you got rid of all the timeouts. You just hope you can bust one or create some room. You don't want a safety there. You don't want a turnover. He was conservative, but I don't know what people wanted him to do. So I can't kill Shanahan for that. And the 49ers, good win, gutty win. That's a good division because Seattle's pretty good. San Francisco, who was starting to look like is the walking wounded with all these injuries. Maybe it's just not their year again. And you start to wonder about their future. Well, that's a big-time win. They're now 4-1. They win in Seattle. They win in L.A. So they are in good shape here going forward. As far as this weekend, my picks, I want to go under 36 Vikings-Browns. I just think that is going to be like a 13-10 game. Wentz behind an awfully beat-up Minnesota offensive line. The left guard's out. The right tackle's out. Their center's out. Their backup center's out. I mean, they're just a complete mash unit on the offensive line. Cleveland's really good on defense, especially up front. And then Cleveland's starting a rookie in Dylan Gabriel against a pretty good Minnesota defense. So I like under 36 there. I like under 43.5, Philly-Denver. Philly has just not looked good offensively. Denver's still really good defensively. Both these teams are pretty good defensively. So I think that 43.5 is a little bit high. So those are the two I really like. And it's crazy, but I actually like the Saints. Laying, what are they laying? A point and a half here. Minus 120 on the money line against the Giants. I just don't know. Dart with no neighbors. First start on the road. He really didn't do much outside of just some runs last week. Against the Saints, and the Saints have not been that bad. You look at them and you're, all right, they're 0-4. They got killed by Seattle. They were right in the game last week against the Bills. They were right in their first two games against the 49ers and who was the Cardinals week one. So I think the Saints actually win this game. If you don't win this game, there's I guess you play the Panthers and you got some reasonable games that you can win. But I do like the Saints. So Saints under 43.5, Broncos and Eagles under 36, Vikings and Browns. NFL picks have been shitty, but they will turn around, I have a feeling. I actually got a good, hopefully have a good feel for this week and in these games going forward. It's not a great slate. I mean, what's the marquee game here? Texans-Ravens is kind of a loser-leaves-town game where the loser's 1-4. Broncos-Eagles is a good game. You know, Vikings-Browns Sunday morning, you can probably sleep through if you're on the West Coast. You know, Lions, Bengals, Chargers, Commanders isn't bad. Patriots, Bills isn't bad. Chiefs, Jaguars, but even the college games. You get Florida and Texas, you get Miami, Florida State, but it's not. There is a little bit of a drop off from the games you had last weekend. So those are the NFL thoughts. I did like a couple NFL win totals. Let's talk about this with Jeff Parles the other night. Bills at 13.5, I think, is an overplay. Look at their schedule. It's going to be hard for them not to get to 14. And Panthers under 5.5 wins. And, there was one other. Oh, Bengals under 6.5 wins. Those are all ones I like. Bills over 13.5. Bengals under 6.5. Panthers under 5.5. These games week to week can be tough, but I feel like if you have a good feel for the big picture here, I mentioned Ravens to miss the playoffs, Steelers to win the division. Those numbers have already moved pretty well here. I feel like these regular season wins are not a bad way to play it. But we'll see what the weekend brings us in football. Can't beat it, man. I mean, you really can't. Divisional round in baseball, all these great games starting on Saturday. The college football, Bama and Vandy's not a bad game. Revenge from last year. All the NFL. It's a packed weekend. It's a loaded weekend. We'll see what Ben Wilson thinks. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, we are back. Should have bet more podcast. A lot to do, a lot to react to, a lot to look forward to. And to do all that, there is nobody better than our next guest. Star play-by-play man in all sports. VEASAN contributor. You can find him lots of places. Is the great Ben Wilson. Ben, what a night, what a couple days, and what a weekend we're looking forward to. What's going on, man? Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, man, what a generous introduction, by the way. I don't know if I'm the best person to bring on. However, I'm pretty fired up. I'm back in my home state of Wisconsin. I will be at game 2, Cubs Brewers. That place for a 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. local first pitch, that place is going to be nuts for a Monday night baseball game. I cannot wait. I've been going to games there since I was a kid. I remember being handed a t-shirt in the Miller Park parking lot in about 2003 saying, "Take back Miller Park," because at that time, there were, I'm not kidding you, Will, 75 to 80% Cubs fans. It was embarrassing. It questioned everything about my fandom to go to your home team's ballpark to see them get their ass kicked and in front of a partisan crowd that was not your own team. So we have all that PTSD and trauma, and I cannot wait. I will not be betting that series because I'm so already emotionally invested. But man, what an environment Monday night is going to be at the Keg.
Who pitched that day? Was it Carlos Zambrano, Mark Pryor? Who was on the mound for those 0-3 Cubs?
It was Ray King probably made an appearance for Milwaukee. Knowing the Brewers at that time, it was probably like Glendon Rush giving up just bombs to Sosa and Aramis Ramirez and that whole cast of characters. So yeah, not a lot of bright days back then. I'll say that.
All right, we'll get to football. We'll get to these four division series. And I love these division series. It's we got some good ones. Let's just quick look back here to game 3, which felt like a game 7. I mean, essentially is a game 7 when you're playing an elimination game. It's as good as a game 7 or a game 5 in the first round. Schlittler, just obviously an all-time performance. What were you expecting going into the game, and what was your reaction as the Yankees figure out a way, thanks to or behind some really shoddy Boston defense here, to move on and face the Blue Jays?
Yeah, and certainly you go even back to game 2 and just shoddy base running. I mean, that was honestly the big difference when you're talking about, and I guess from my perspective, watching every Brewer game, you get very attuned to noticing which teams do the little things right. And that certainly was Boston's downfall. I thought just from a macro perspective, Will, that Cam Schlittler really bailed out Aaron Boone because he basically had the decision taken out of his own hands. Like, he didn't have to make the call of pulling a guy probably 2 innings too early because he was that dominant, that good, and the bats did enough early enough to give him that cushion. I still don't know. I mean, the Yankees are such a team that, and you can speak more to this having watched them closer than I have, but I go from game to game and kind of feel like there are pieces of that team that are put together and solid, and there's other pieces I just don't have any trust in. So yes, as someone looking at things from the Yankees and kind of combining it to the Blue Jay perspective, somebody who watched Toronto this year was never that impressed just purely from a how would it translate to the postseason perspective. But now looking at the lines coming out and seeing that opening price in a lot of spots, Toronto plus 125, plus 130, I get why, and certainly you have the public aspect of the Yankees, but a lot of that stuff seems to be priced in with the predicted regression of the mean here for Toronto. So I come to a kind of a position of believing that's not a price I want anything to do with. Like, are you really going to trust the Yankees with no home field to lay that sort of number? Probably better off just looking game to game there. And I think the fascinating part is, Schlittler goes, 110 plus pitches, first pitcher in postseason history, 8 plus innings, 12 plus Ks, no walks. When do we see him again and for how long? And I think that question is still up in the air. And that to me will dictate a lot as to how I will go ahead and bet this series.
Yeah, and just, look, I would imagine they haven't announced anything. We're doing this a little after the Rams 49ers game ended. So the Yankee game ended an hour ago or a couple hours ago. I don't know if Boone announced anything. I would imagine it's between Heal or Warren. I would imagine it's Luis Heal in game 1. And then you turn over the rotation where it's Fried in game 2 on Sunday. You get Monday off. Tuesday is game 3 in Rodon. So you wouldn't be looking until next Wednesday. So if you needed Schlittler for a game 4, and getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, that's probably how it would play out, where Schlittler does get his full rest. And You got to feel with Fried going to game two, you got a good shot to get the split in Toronto, and then it's 1-1 and you're headed back to the Yankee Stadium for games three and four. So I'm with you. I'm not surprised the Yankees are favored, but I do feel like there's a Yankee tax built into this line.
100%. And we could say the same thing about the Dodgers. And I believe LA wins that series. For as good as Philadelphia has been, I found myself believing, as much as I was super high on them to start the year, I just watching them a lot, feel a little paper tigerish, which is a weird statement to make about a team that has a lot of star power. I don't know though that I, you know, no matter what the matchup would have been, like had, you know, like for instance, had the Mets not completely collapsed down the stretch, had they ended up in the position of Cincinnati, had they beaten LA, I certainly, and the pricing would not have been what we're seeing right now with the Dodgers right now, anywhere from -125 to 130. That probably would have been Philadelphia favored after, you know, beating the Mets by double-digit games in the regular season in the division. I probably would have been on the Mets side in that, and that's with a team that has way more flaws than this current Dodgers squad. So that kind of goes into you get the sentiment on certain matchups, and the market certainly takes a side on that as well. And then you have to ask yourself as a bettor, okay, am I comfortable laying, you know, 15, 20 cents more than I probably thought I ought to have, even though that is the side I like. And I think that's kind of your classic quandary when you're talking about Yankees and Dodgers specifically.
Just to give a reset here of the series prices, Yankees -152, Blue Jays +130. These are at FanDuel. Mariners -172, Tigers +146, Dodgers -124, Phillies +108, and then the Brewers -116, the Cubs +100. Is there anything, if I made you bet one of those four, if one of those four, you say, you know what, that one's a little mispriced or off, like what's your best bet of the eight options here in terms of the series winners?
Yeah, making me pick one, I would probably go with the ugliest dog and just take the Tigers. As great as this Mariners run has been, and we've done a bunch of shows together, Will, and you and I are both very pro Seattle, love what they've done down the home stretch. It's also, we talk about this a lot in football terms, when it's week to week and you see the team that all of a sudden gets on a heater, wins a couple games, and now they're laying 7.5 at home, right? And they've never been in this position before. It's a lot to ask now for Seattle, and I get it. Detroit was terrible down the home stretch. But look, as much as it's easy to kind of laugh at when the team and a manager says, oh yeah, okay, everything's 0-0. We're pretending like the last month didn't happen. Give Detroit credit. The way they defensively were awful in game two, the way the bats were so quiet, and to find a way to get through that series against a super hot team in Cleveland, I don't necessarily get how you can just automatically write them off and say, okay, well, that was that basically 6-week sample size is definitely, we can 100% say, going to carry over into a best of five against an unproven team who, similar to Detroit on the negative side, had a similar time span as far as the positive in Seattle getting hot. That just felt just kind of my first gut reaction, Will, was I thought Seattle should have probably been more like in the 150 range, kind of where the Yankees are priced, and this should have been Detroit like +130. Circa's as high as +160. That's a little aggressive for me. So Detroit would be the one play as far as a side I'd look at in the fourth series.
Yeah, I agree. There's value on Detroit there. You get Skubal in 2 and 5 and maybe just figure out a way to win one of the other games. That being said, I don't know, wouldn't it be kind of fitting after all this debate of Judge versus Raleigh? It'll be similar to back in the NFL playoffs when Lamar and Josh Allen faced off and we didn't know who was going to win MVP at the moment because they announced it a couple weeks after. Wouldn't it be fitting if we do get Judge versus Cal Raleigh in the ALCS? I kind of feel like that's where we're headed.
I would love to see that series. I mean, just – and aside from the Judge Raleigh part of it, just the way those teams are constructed, the fan bases, it would be awesome. I'm just kind of playing the numbers here, as I know you do the same thing.
Yep, 100%. How about the National League side? Your guys, the Brewers, -116, and then the Dodgers are slight favorites. As much as I love these series from a fan standpoint, I don't look at anything, to kind of answer my own question. Wow, I can't believe that's the line. I have to bet this. It's boring, but they look kind of properly priced. Otani in game one at plus money, where Sanchez, I know he's been outstanding. He really has, but this is a different animal, the Dodger lineup. Dodgers in that ballpark, you figure you'd be able to hit the ball out of the ballpark. I'm intrigued by Otani at plus money in game one, but as far as the series, nothing really jumps out to me. What do you think here in these two NL series?
Same, yeah. Maybe you look at maybe there's some exactas like a Dodgers in four, something like that. If you want a little more bang for your buck, that would kind of be my pick. I believe in the Dodgers. you know, look, and as I said at the top, like, I'm not betting Cubs Brewers. I'm already so emotionally invested. The big question, though, I mean, Milwaukee, you're going to see Freddy Peralta. He's already been announced game one. Quinn Priester likely going game two. You know, Brandon Woodruff had looked so good after his injury coming off the IL, and then they put him back on the IL at the end of the regular season. Jose Quintana hits the IL end of the regular season. Jacob Mizorowski's totally fallen apart since he hit the IL. He's probably going to be used as a bullpen guy. I'm really curious how Pat Murphy, and he's got plenty of arms to do it, but how he plays that game after you get through the first two games. And so, look, not to suggest that Milwaukee's got to be up 2-0 going back to Wrigley, and they've had the Cubs number ever since Craig Counsell sold his soul and went to the north side. But that's just the one thing I'd keep in mind for folks. I think it's one of those things where, you know, look, if you are a believer in, you know, if you're kind of skeptical in Milwaukee, and I think a lot of people are, I mean, when you're the best team in baseball and you're not even close to the favorite in your own league to win the pennant, and you're basically a pick 'em in the divisional series when you won almost 100 games, that kind of tells you all I need to know. If I was betting this, though, and I was really skeptical of Milwaukee, I'd probably look at, you know, Chicago's got to get one of the first two games with the way Milwaukee's going to stack their rotation. And I'd much rather bet against Freddy Peralta than Quinn Priester, just based on the body of work. So if I'm forced to say anything, I would say I'd probably rather just take a stab on the Cubs like game one, as opposed to looking at that full series price. Because I do believe over the 5-game set, I know that's a small sample size, but Brewers have been clearly the better team. The little things do add up in these, even in a 5-game series. I see them finding enough of a way to get arms and get outs. And Peralta, for as great as he has been as an ace, he doesn't really go deep into games. And the Brewer bullpen has really been taxed down the stretch. So that's probably the only way I'd do it if I just wanted some value and I wanted to take a sprinkle like in a specific game spot there early in the series.
NFL, before we get to what you like this weekend, but just a typical NFL game on Thursday night. I feel like I say this every week, where I'll just be crazy for betting on this league. Line goes from 3.5 all the way up to 8.5. Congrats on your CLV. The Niners win it outright. Some survivor carnage for the first time in a while, where this is the biggest upset we've had all year. It felt like at 3 or 4 different times the 49ers were definitely going to win. It felt 3 or 4 different times the Rams were definitely going to win. You have the fumble, so many twists and turns. What was your takeaway? Do you have any issues with any of the coaching decisions, and do you feel differently about any of these teams here than you did coming into the game?
Well, look, I think about the Rams and coming into the game, and first you look at it and you go, okay, with the taxi squad basically the Niners were throwing out there, like, how could you make a case? But I mean, let's just go through the Rams. And I mean, I've been very high relative to the market on LA. I bet on them at least, I know, 2 of the first 4 weeks. I didn't have a play tonight. But, I mean, the Rams were very fortunate to win in cover week 1 against a pretty below-average Houston team. You go to week 2, and I had Tennessee in that game. LA's down in the third quarter, and the Titans just basically tightened, and Brian Callahan began his quest to help you cash your big ticket on first coach fired. Week 3, complete no-show in the second half. Obviously should have covered the game, probably should have won. But you can't just not play for 2 quarters and expect to win a game against a good team. And in last week, we're very fortunate to not only win but also cover in that spot. Rams, you know, they haven't put together even close to a full 60 minutes, if you're really breaking it down, Will, over 5 weeks. And they have a lot more questions and answers for me, even as a team that I went into this week, like, I power rated them as a top 5 team in the league. Like, there's a lot to like, but there's still a lot of inconsistencies as well. And that was kind of my Rams takeaway, just from a macro perspective. This game only enhanced that. Also, I'm kind of, the more data points we get, and I realize it's only been 2 and they've come in the last 2 weeks, I'm becoming pretty staunchly team take the ball first in these overtime games, Will, with the pacing. Like, I think, you know, and I think it started to happen, especially like in our betting spaces, in our inner circles. I think it's going to start to happen a little bit more in the mainstream, where like announcers and such, and I pay attention to this as an announcer myself, where, you know, you hear the play-by-play guys just say, yep, you got to defer, got to take the ball second here. I mean, the timing makes it totally different. Like, in what world are these teams, are you ever going to have, if you take the ball second, you're never going to have a 4 possession overtime. It just doesn't happen. Like, the whole premise is based on the college game, where timing doesn't even exist. So it's completely asinine to just think that should translate over separately. And I think Kyle Shanahan was right going back to the Super Bowl a couple years ago, when everybody killed him for taking the ball first. And I agree with him. Like, look, if you settle for three, and if you're conservative, and if your defense can't get a stop, like, so be it. But as I watched the Rams drive down the field, I, even though it felt like they were probably going to score a touchdown, at the same time, Will, I felt like, you know what, I'd much rather be the Niners, given the, you know, the clock, the score in that situation. You're basically forcing the Rams into making the decision for them. Like, there was no malleability, there was no flexibility for what they could decide to do. So I think we're getting to that point here where these coaches might start thinking the other way, and we'll see these overtime games go a little bit different as far as the coin toss is concerned.
Yep, completely agree. Because, I mean, think about it, and I think Shanahan has had his issues with game management in the past and being conservative and things like that. But, you know, back to the Super Bowl, if you took the ball second and Mahomes got the extra at bat and beat you on that extra at bat, so let's just say you trade punts or you trade field goals, then the Chiefs win it, everyone would be killing them and say, wait, you gave Mahomes an extra possession? What are you, stupid? So a lot of times it's just people playing the results, as we know.
Absolutely. No, and think about, like, the timing too. I mean, you know, and I realize the playoffs, it's a different animal, but, you know, even if you take the, you know, you take the ball second, you give up a touchdown, even you score a touchdown, well, now what, right? Like, if you know what you have to do, I mean, it honestly then becomes a game of, well, you're probably just going to have to score and then go for two, which, you know, the math on that, the odds on that are certainly suboptimal, sub 50%. Even if you're assuming you're going to get the touchdown there, and then because if you decide to kick the extra point, there's probably best case scenario for you, like 2 minutes left and you're having to give the ball back again. So there's a lot more, I think, to go into that discussion than just the simple, just the simple college theology that we've always been taught for years and years and years.
And you had no problem, I'm guessing, with McVay going for it. I mean, the play call was not very imaginative to just kind of bunch everyone together and run it up the middle. I feel like that's, again, that's probably playing the result a little bit, but I don't know. Do you have any quibble with McVay or how he handled it?
No, I thought, and I mean, we're reacting like a half hour after the game ended. I thought he had to go. I thought that was the only, I mean, that was his only choice. Like, what, are you going to kick, tie game? You have one timeout left. There's 3 minutes to go. I mean, unless I get that Mac Jones was banged up, but the only scenario you're even getting the ball back is basically if the Niners go, you know, go three and out and punt. Like, the odds at that point, of you winning the game, they had to have been like 5% or less. I mean, best case scenario, you're probably tying and you're giving San Francisco a chance to have the last say. So I thought he absolutely had to do what he did. Play call, yeah, not exactly what I was expecting. Not the best play call in the world, but I thought it was 100% the right call.
Yeah, and I know I was in the group chat, Wishnev and a bunch of the guys said, he said San Francisco deserves to lose. I didn't have a huge problem with that, but he thought the 49ers were just a little too conservative at the end when they got the fumble to just play for, all right, we'll run it three times and punt. I get that, and you weren't picking up a first down with those plays. The problem is the Rams had three timeouts. You want to get their timeouts out of the mix, and you are at your own, like, I don't know, yard line, half a yard line, where it's hard to get too cute there and throw the ball and do things like that. I don't know. Did you have any take on that?
Yeah, it's like, what else do you want him to do? Like, Mac Jones is on one leg. They're putting nine in the box. Like, it, you know, had it been – I was thinking about this. Had, say the Rams had two timeouts there, I wonder if they had been ballsy enough to take a safety after, like, on third down – or on a fourth down after running the clock down to, like, 20 seconds and basically gambling – you know, we're up one, we can punt it deep enough. The Rams would basically at that point need, let's call it, like 30 to 35 yards in, you know,
the way,
15
the way the
seconds.
Kick, I don't know. To bring losing into the equation on a field goal, I was thinking that too. Probably wouldn't have. That would have been fascinating to see.
But again, yeah, moot point with the three timeouts, yeah, because you just knew. But that, it's funny, that, like, that was the first thought that came to my mind, just with how shaky Cardi's been in the whole operation for the Rams. Like, would they have dared do that? Right. I don't know if we'll ever find that answer out.
All right, last one. What'd you bet this week for NFL? And you can throw some college in there if you have anything college.
You know, yeah, I'll stick NFL. The quote unquote, you know, good games on paper here. It's not that, like, I make the line way off of where the market's at, but Washington and the LA Chargers here, like, I made it Chargers 3. I mean, we're sitting 2.5 pretty much everywhere, but really don't like the spot at all for Jaden Daniels coming back here. When you think about all that's going on with his wide receiver room, and, you know, maybe Terry McLaurin comes back this week, he's still banged up. I don't know about Noah Brown. He hasn't practiced. Deebo Samuel hasn't practiced. Your top three wide receivers haven't practiced at all this week. And you're going to come back if you're Jaden Daniels, and who knows how close to 100% healthy is, but you're going to come back against one of the best defenses in the league, who's top five against the pass, who's coming off just a really sloppy, embarrassing performance. It was kind of just your classic, you know, vintage old school handicapping flat spot, you know, the early kick time on the road against a desperate team in New York. I don't see that going well for Jaden Daniels. And for the, you know, for the Chargers, and it, as bad as it looked on the offensive line at the end of that game, Will, against the Giants, and, you know, and Joe Alt's doubtful here this week, at least, I mean, Mekhi Becton has been at practice this week. It sounds like he is going to go. So it's really just the left tackle spot you have to worry about. The rest of that line is intact. And, I mean, it's not like this Washington defense really scares you if you're a team that has somewhat of a banged-up O-line. You know, Washington's been, you know, they've been top 10 against the run, but they're just getting killed in the secondary. Bottom five on an EPA per play basis against the pass. So getting the number below three here in a bounce back, and we're such a reactionary league week to week. I thought it was a little bit of an overreaction on bad Chargers in New York. At the same time, a bit of an overreaction of Daniels back. You automatically just, because he's Jaden Daniels, you have to upgrade the Commanders an insane amount. So I thought that was a little bit aggressive. I thought the Chargers deserved to at least be 3-point favorites at home.
Ben, this was fun, man. If I have you on in, I don't know, a couple of weeks, a month, and if I have you on during the World Series, who are the two teams that are going to be playing?
I'm gonna try to manifest this into existence. I'm gonna go Brewers Yankees, and we're gonna pit our heads together.
I had a feeling you were gonna say that. I think we did the show together the first Saturday of the baseball season when those two teams played. Remember the Yankees?
Yes.
Won.
Oh my
like
god!
21-4 or something, and the Yankees swept them. Everything was torpedo bats. It would be kind of a, I don't know if ironic's the right word, if those two teams met again in the World Series.
Dude, that was so funny because you handled it so well. You just kind of kept casually bringing up live updates just to like dig the knife a little deeper. And it was a really funny bit. And about the 12th time, I was starting to get annoyed. I'm like, all right, come on, Will. My team is getting just absolutely embarrassed. But that would be awesome. It's always, like, October for me is wild just because, you know, I'm doing play-by-play and like my first college hoops game is in – I have an exhibition in 2 weeks, and it's like, wow. your brain just becomes so scattered. But it's crazy. Like the baseball, especially when you're, you know, a team like Milwaukee that's never done anything, you know, one World Series appearance, and it was way before I was born. Like that just kind of usurps everything else that matters in your life. And I will be so locked in. I cannot wait. That's the thing for me. Like I'll be, you know, I think my first college hoops game, it's USC Loyola Marymount exhibition for those who are wondering on ESPN Plus. If that's on the night of a Brewer playoff game, like I'll probably have an iPad with the game on somewhere just to have eyes on it. Like you kind of understand and you learn like these opportunities do not come around all that often. So I'm going to enjoy it. That's for sure.
Yeah. Maybe not for you because your job is so related to like college basketball in that field, but I don't know. These winter sports just sneak up on you. I see there was an NBA exhibition game today, and there's already been NHL preseason games. I always have the same reaction anytime I see the first NHL preseason game, and I think they started, I don't know, a week or two ago. I was like, wow, already? And it's every year, even though I know when it starts. It's just I have that. I can't believe they're back. It feels like those seasons just ended. It's remarkable. They have like a off season.
Well, you know, so my first basketball game of the season, Will, was like almost a month ago. I called the NBA G League sent an all-star team to Japan and they did two exhibition games and I called those games remotely. And it was like to call a game like the Monday after week one of the NFL and it's basketball. Like I was just, my head, it was about to explode. I was like, what is happening? It's the Gunn McCrane Thunders. Who are these players? Like it was an experience. That's for sure. But a lot of fun.
Ben, appreciate it, man. Hopefully we'll do it again soon. Where can we find you?
Yeah, likewise, my man. Thank you as always for having me on. I'm at Ben_Wilson_1. As I mentioned, I've got college hoops play-by-play for ESPN Plus starting up already in a couple weeks, and then I'll be doing a lot for the NBA this year. I'm actually doing a lot of voiceovers for their recaps as the season starts, and then doing G League again this year. I'm doing all the home games for the Mexico City Capitanes. So if you are wanting to, and that'll be in English. Don't worry, English language broadcast. So. That's what I'm doing for now. That's the winter season. We'll keep you posted on other stuff as it happens. And I'm the most loyal Should Have Bet More /Megapod listener. So, I mean, I'm really spending my free time just listening to you bloviate, Will.
Ben, appreciate it, man. Hopefully we'll do it again soon. Thanks.
You got it.
All right, that will do it. Rate, review, subscribe. Go to Apple, leave a review. We're doing a giveaway, $250 just to be eligible. You have to, all you have to do is leave a review on Apple, and you are eligible. So check that out. Apple review. If you leave a review on Spotify, appreciate it. But there's no way to track those and enter you into the drawing. But rate, review, subscribe. We'll be back Monday. We'll have plenty to talk about. See you then.